We're sitting talking about this, and Rob's over there sipping on his dry red wine. Like, these assholes messing with my sophistication.
Over under on the number of balls jokes that are tied to the name of the film.
I know I'm gonna make at least 7.5. So you're gonna need to start there. You're gonna need to start there. 6.5.
So, Phil, why don't we just remove all doubt and just go in for the full castration? All right, welcome back to our loyal listeners and hopefully some new listeners here. This is the Sports Flicks Just Give Us Clicks or Whiskey. We also accept whiskey if you want to give us some whiskey. So I guess we're back, guys, for another episode. We're going to be talking about the movie Moneyball starring Mr. Brad Pitt. I guess we'll just get right into this, guys. I guess we can go around and talk about your guys' experience with the movie, who watched it when it came out in theaters, who's seen it, how many times you've seen it, if you literally just got done watching it 2 minutes ago. Dan, who wants to start us out? Just tell us something about your experience with the movie.
My full experience involves me watching it about 3 days ago. I never watched it before that.
Really?
I watched it for the first time for this podcast. And one thing I really loved about it is because back in 2001, I was a huge baseball fan. So it was fun following what was going on and recognizing the players' names and remembering those players when they played, because I did love baseball around this time. And that was a big part of what I really enjoyed about it. But yeah, I had never seen it up until a few days ago.
I think I saw it. I'm trying to remember. I think I saw it in the theater, actually, when it first came out. And yeah, it was really cool. Actually, I had not even heard. Obviously, there's a book written about this, which inspired the movie. And I didn't even know there was a book about it until the movie came out. And anyway, I have actually read that book, golly, probably 4 or 5 years ago. But yeah, you definitely learn a lot. It's really cool. It's pretty interesting how it's changed sports today, not just baseball, but all of them. So
that's interesting, Dan, because I always thought that, I swear we talked about that, and I always thought you read Moneyball before the movie came out, and then you talked about it, so I didn't realize that.
But pretty interesting guy. Came up with kind of the modern game 30 years ago. So
it's wild. But yeah, my background with the movie was I did actually go see it in the theater. Eric and I went on a date to watch it, actually. So it was before we had kids. It was like a more chill time. Just the weekend, we'd be like, oh, that movie looks good. Let's go get it. Let's go watch it. And yeah, that was kind of I had known about it. I had heard about some of that stuff. I didn't really understand necessarily everything, like the in-depth part of it, but that would probably be my experience with it, was just getting to watch that movie. And yeah, I kind of enjoyed some of the things, just touching on that real quick, that Phil mentioned, like seeing some of the players, like in that 20th game, we saw like Mark Sweeney on the Royals. I remember him playing for the Royals back then, so that was kind of cool. But anyway,
I remember the book being a big deal when it came out, but I still haven't read it to this day. I watched the movie. I don't think I watched it in theaters. I think rented it maybe, but I've seen it I think maybe one other time since then. But it was good. I liked it. I thought it was really good how they Hollywoodized it, of course, but I thought it was good how they went into detail about the types of players they look for and how the old antiquated methods don't really work anymore. And now Major League Baseball, to this day, they all incorporate analytics to some degree, some more so than others, but usually the most successful franchises are the most heavy into it. The Rays really have, the Rays and the Astros actually, and then since the general manager of the Rays has taken over the Dodgers, they have now too, but they're really ahead of the curve in more recent times, and they passed up Billy Beane. But even now, the A's are, Billy Beane's still the general manager of the A's, and they're still relevant.
Pretty good team, yeah.
Yeah, so I just think it's really interesting. And then the scenes where it has him like wheeling and dealing with other general managers, and how he's explaining to his little crony that whatever the guy that's fat and skinny sometimes, you know, pick a body and go with it. You know what I mean? But he's like, he's kind of like,
he's just trying to better his life. But like,
just pick a body and go with it. Okay. But anyway, the way he's explaining to him, he's like you wait, he'll call back. I don't know. It was an entertaining movie. I enjoyed it.
This is one of these movies that I didn't really get to see in the theater. So I know she's on this podcast, but my wife does not like movies. And so any movie is very much on my own to watch usually. And I never got a chance to watch Moneyball until I was flying to Argentina for work. And this was one of these times when I couldn't sleep on the plane. So I'm sitting there looking for something to watch, and Moneyball was there. So first time I got to watch Moneyball was actually flying to Buenos Aires. And I'd say, man, I've watched this movie now about 6-7 times, and there's just something that's just completely compelling to it. That's, I see myself in a lot of these situations. I'm basically arguing to try new and different techniques and trust analytics, try statistics. I actually use technology, but yeah, this is really a movie that speaks to me as a baseball fan. And I'm probably out of all of us on here the biggest baseball fan here. And that's not just because the Astros are having this great run. This has always just kind of been a lifestyle for me. I'm actually this week of the World Series for recording, but
Dan's pointing out the baseballs on his wall, by the way.
Yeah, I see them, man. I see them. I know Mr.
It's Will like a Kermit the Frog moment. Not that's any of my business.
Why Dan was showing us his forehead. Like, what's he doing?
Well, Dan was showing you all his balls, baseballs.
That's money balls.
It's one joke. We're on the way.
I love the line, "How can you not be romantic about baseball?" And yeah. To me, baseball is such a very personal thing. And I think it's just because for me, I'm watching the games alone for the most part. And this is like a little thing that is just between me and what's going on there with my team. And so I do see some odd romance in it over the years. But also, yeah. I think that the sabermetrics to it, I know a lot of people who are like baseball purists hate sabermetrics, absolutely just are appalled with it. And still to this day, are this is destroying the sport. I disagree. I think what it's done is it's allowed for parity to actually work its way into a organization such as Major League Baseball, in which you have always had the Yankees. You've always had the big money teams, the big ones that can always go out there and just buy whoever, and they're going to play in pinstripes. It's interesting that you have sabermetrics now. The Yankees have not won a World Series. They won one World Series in 2010. 2010, they won the World Series.
2009.
And that was it. At the Moneyball here, they're talking about the Yankees winning three straight World Series at the end of 1999, 2000s. And then sabermetrics took over into the leagues. And now the Yankees have managed to win one World Series out of all this. Yep. Yet they have still maintained the highest payroll. So actually, I love sabermetrics. I think it's opened up the sport, and I think it's actually given to great possibilities within markets and fans and teams that have never really had a chance and go stroke.
It's proven that, like you said, it's not just about the money, and that any team that can run up to Lowe's and buy a good set of trash cans can achieve their dreams.
Hey, we need a video camera too, Brad.
Can you get video cameras at Lowe's?
Probably.
We get wireless buzzers too. Hey, those are good.
And
Rob, hey, but in all fairness,
keep that jersey on, Rob. Keep the jersey on. Go to an iPad too, man.
Hey, in all fairness, every team could go to their local hardware store and buy a trash can. So just because the other teams didn't think of it.
You know what else is interesting about this movie? And by the time the actual movie came out, like, a lot of professional sports were using analytics, but really the book Moneyball was really what baseball was the pioneer on analytics in general.
Yeah.
And
it's it's such a statistics driven sport. It would be in baseball first.
So when Moneyball came out, like, it didn't just change baseball, it changed sports in general.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the NBA is so much more analytical now, where it's 3-point shots and dunks, than it was back then.
Bring back hand checking and see what happens with that.
The NFL is as well. It's like you don't draft running backs in the first round really anymore like you used to. No. There's five or six positions in the NFL that are premier positions: quarterback, receiver, corner, pass rusher, and offensive tackle. So it's like how analytics has changed all the sports since Moneyball came out is really interesting.
And you look at it, it changes them all, but it changes them all in different ways. I think baseball is the perfect test pilot for this because they're talking about on-base percentage and stuff like that. If a guy gets walked, it's not like it took a bunch of interaction between him and his teammates to get walked, whereas different sports have more interaction. So I think it was the perfect place to start the analyzing all these numbers because they weren't as reliant as maybe some other sports would be. And then it started there and just took off. And of course, it molded into other sports, but that was a great place for it to start.
The interesting thing about the on-base percentage, particularly when talking about walks versus hits, is the logic is it's not just for the batter to get yourself to base. It's also about driving the pitches and getting the pitch count up. Individuals who walk tend to have very long at-bats. And you look at now in Major League Baseball, to have a starter go beyond five innings is getting to the point where it's fairly rare.
Yeah, that's a funny thing. I'm going to jump in here is that that's where I think the new frontier is. And you're starting to see that now where it's gone up to another level. Another derivative of this is that the starting pitching is so different. We don't even do that. You're starting to find that teams like the Rays, this is a perfect example of this. They just roll out with relievers actually to start games. So they don't even come at you with a starter. They come at you with three different guys in the first three innings, see where the game is. And then they decide how committed they're going to get from that point on with their management of their pitchers. Are they going to go with a guy that, hell, we're getting beat 7-0 or something? It's okay, let's just get through this thing and move on to tomorrow. And then if they've got a nice lead or it's a close game, they're going to go in with kind of what their main starter would have been. But it's like a reaction to where they are within the game script. And that's where I was thinking about. And I wanted to transition to that because that's something we've talked about. I don't know if that's like when you get into these other sports, this is something I mentioned with you guys on football. We've always had this traditional thing where you had a bell cow running back and that kind of deal. And nowadays,
linebacker.
Yeah. And nowadays we really don't do that because you don't want to get your running back beat all to hell. So it's smart. Okay, I know this guy's going to get hammered like in 4 or 5 games this year, no matter what. So I don't know which ones those are going to be, but why volunteer that? I mean, why put that guy into a battering ram situation right off the bat? If I'm up 30-3 by the third quarter and this guy's already gotten 20 carries, that was not good management for him for the season. Maybe I could have just gone in with my scat back and dumped it around and perhaps not even had to use this guy today because I'm going up against a far inferior opponent. So I don't know. It's just sort of interesting how to me, how a lot of this stuff's starting to get managed. You're sharing a load. And like you said, Bud, you're getting into linebackers. I'll let you cover that there. But these, what we're asking of these positions is totally changed.
It's a percentage game, like you were saying. It's especially you look at a sport like baseball and how many games they play a year. Yeah. It's astronomical. But you make a good point on the pitching, Dan. I remember when we were all kids, it was pretty typical that a starting pitcher made it, what, 7 innings?
Oh,
yeah.
Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling, Pedro Martinez. I mean, those guys would go at least 7 or 8.
Well, that was the norm.
Guys. I mean, the norm was 7 innings. You could have like scrum type pitchers, like a Mike Hampton type guy who was expected to just go.
Hampton had some good years.
Yeah.
Until he got paid.
He's not a total scrub, but he's the quickest, not Mike Maddox name that comes to my head. Shane Reynolds.
Hey, I had a question about, I don't know if this had popped into anyone's mind. I'm sure it did during this, but I just couldn't help but when I saw this, I couldn't help but think of Mike Leach to Texas Tech and Oklahoma State. Where I watch it and I'm like, okay, this was like Texas Tech 25 years ago, early mid-90s. They're rotting on the vine. They've got to do something different. And they get Leach and they start this crazy air raid. And they're doing it with just all these little ordinary guys. They're not really great athletes. In fact, there's a good number of these guys that are just simply walk-on guys that they're making this work because they're playing a space game. And they're playing a snap game where they're getting far more snaps run than their opponent. They're using space. so they don't have to actually have superior athletes to make it work. The way they line up their guys, it was just real interesting. And then you see a team like Oklahoma State who gets a bunch of money dumped on them. And suddenly it's, okay, we're getting our ass kicked by Texas Tech for the last 10 years, but now we've got money and we can actually upgrade our talent. Hell, here's what we're going to do. We're going to hire their coaches away. We're going to get a little bit better players and we're going to Boston Red Sox the Oakland A's. And that's what we did.
And we and facilities that didn't look like the middle level high school down the street.
We beat them at their own game. And now, what you're seeing is unfortunate. There's a bigger fish out there. And teams like Oklahoma State are now not ahead of the curve. And you've got teams like Texas. And basically the entire SEC is now obviously adopted this. They even hired Leach, for God's sake. So it's gotten to this point where now it's bigger and badder and deeper pockets have adopted these systems, and it's really
but,
made it.
But I think I feel you like know, there's a lot of give and take with the air raid because I feel like it keeps going back and forth.
But the air raid doesn't really even exist in Big 12 like it used to.
Yeah.
Even before you look at it,
it's because defenses are catching up.
Well, look at the average scores now compared to 10 years ago.
And also, because the thing about the air raid is it's a lot of dinking and dunking, 15 yards at a time, having your guys get open in space, what Dan was saying, and giving them a lot of space to run. But the thing is, what they realize is as the offense is getting more and more snaps, that also means, in fact, their defense is getting more and more snaps on the field. Yeah. So your defense tires out. So I feel like it's going back and forth because even right now, it's like the running backs that are the big guys in the Big 12, if you will.
And not defenses the are starting to get and better in the Big 12.
And defenses are catching up, kind of what Bud had said just a little bit ago. So I feel like it's a give and take going back and forth.
And Texas Tech is back in the toilet firing another coach again. So they've gone full circle.
What's interesting about the air raid is everyone.
But this wasn't even the air raid back then with Michael Leach at the very beginning, guys. The air raid was just a little twinkle in the eye. That was an idea. The spread offense is the actual spread offense at the very beginning of Texas Tech is a derivative of what was being run at the University of Tulsa in the late 1960s.
Yes. Yes.
The whole idea and the premise behind it is actually you don't have enough talent, like what Dan's saying, but at offensive line in that running, you cannot compete physically. So what the idea is that you mimic a running game by showing short screens and short passes and bubble screens.
Yes. And get high percentage plays.
Exactly. You can't run the damn ball. So you know what? We're going to be able to throw 3-4 yard passes against you. And that mimics a running game. And then we can hit you deep.
Well, and actually everyone credits Leach, but it was really Hal Mumme at Kentucky who worked for him.
Yes.
And got Tim Couch to be the number one pick in the NFL draft by the Browns.
There's a book called The Perfect Pass. Have you guys ever heard of this?
No, but I've heard of a book called Moneyball.
Okay, yeah, Mumme, this is what this is all about, as Bud was saying, is how Mumme and Mike Leach and how the two came together. And really, it talks about Mumme and his experience at really small level football trying this and then meeting Leach and then getting him indoctrinated into it and then what you today in the modern game. But that it's called The Perfect Pass for our listeners if they're interested.
Well,
Chip Rob Kelly wants us to get back on track.
Yeah, I think we strayed a little there. I think we gotta jump back into some movie stuff. All right, so back in with Moneyball for those who remember what movie we're just gonna, no, I'm just kidding. I'm kind of gonna wrap some of these things into one. Let's talk about characters, guys. Let's just go with favorite. This can be for any reason you want. Who is your favorite character? Who do you think really shined throughout this and made the movie?
Oh, it's got to be Peter Brandt and Jonah Hill. It's probably Highway Robbery that he didn't actually win the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor.
Especially because it's not his usual kind of role, and he killed it.
It's a fabulous role. It's a role that probably could have been a bit of an unmemorable deal. You could play this in so many ways, but I like the progression, just a little bit of progression to it, because I know guys like this. They're very analytical. They're very smart. They're nice people, but they're not like really personable. Yeah, it's like Office Space where the guy's yelling, I have to talk to the engineers kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like his personal progression because at the very beginning, he's wearing like suit and tie. He's going into the office. And then it, towards the end, he's wearing Oakland A's hats and Oakland A's. He's become branded, which I like that because it's showing that it's the front office who is not really being able to identify as working for a sports organization. And now he's really come into that whole, I am part of the Oakland A's. Yeah, I liked how that worked.
You can also see his confidence grow throughout the movie. Yeah. Because at the beginning, he has no confidence.
Yeah, because everybody just sees him. Believing in him. Yeah, everybody sees him as this kid who graduated from Yale with an economics degree and not as somebody who belongs on a baseball staff. And all it took was one person paying attention to him and actually listening to him.
I love that scene where him and Billy Bean are trying to close the deal. And you got the secretary over here and Billy Bean's yelling, get him on the phone. Get him on the phone. You, on my count, 1, 2, 3. And they're trying to close out the deal. And Jonah Hill is there. He's listening on the phone. He's got his hand and he's like clenching it. And he goes, yeah, baby. Yeah. Hey, that's fantasy football for me, man. Like, yeah, you're going to take him sweet. All right. Hang up the phone. Never, once you get the answer, you just hang up the phone.
Isn't it amazing how fast talking and fast paced and all that, all those deals are?
That's incredible. Yeah.
And
I thought it was like, kind of funny too.
It's just casual. Like, watch this. I'll do this.
Well, it's probably Hollywoodized a little bit, but.
It's Aaron Sorkin.
I like how you can tell it's Aaron Sorkin
in the screenplay in some of these scenes. It's that walk and talk, it's that quick jive back and forth, it's beautiful dialogue.
Yeah, I would also agree that Peter was probably my favorite, and I'll say, but I'll bring up somebody else just for the interest of a variety. But I wanted to mention a scene that I liked, or we're going to do that later, right?
Tie it in, baby.
There's no format here. So he seems like this really like cold, calculated guy at the beginning of the movie, speaking to you guys' point about how you can see his progression and stuff. And at the very end of the movie, he takes the time while Billy Bean is thinking about the offer that he got from the Red Sox to leave and stuff. And he takes him in there to the film room and shows him, like, I don't think they say, but you get the impression he's like some AA or AAA ball player or something. And he's at bat and he hits the ball and he thinks it's just like a double, but he never goes for second base because he's like a bigger guy. Not real fast, and decides he wants to, falls down, feels stupid, he's crawling back to first, and then they have to sit there and tell him, oh wait, no, you actually hit a home run. It was cool that he could find the beauty of the game and something like that, when up to this point it was almost like it was all just numbers for him. It's like boiling down everybody. So I thought that was cool how they added that little touch in there, that it was like he was getting love for the game itself. Maybe the romance of the game. And it wasn't just, oh, this guy is a 700 on base percentage. No doubt.
That was something. I'm going to jump in on that too, because that I was actually going to say, maybe for me, even though it's obviously Jonah Hill's great in this, but I that's one thing I liked about Brad Pitt though in the movie, was that his character, we see a lot of numbers and a lot of analytics here, but his character actually, though he's all in on that, he has so much of the human element that he really is doing. And it's just, he's mixing it in throughout the movie. And it's really genius because, again, I've quoted this guy a thousand times, Ted Lasso, but he has a great way of, I thought, he did a great job of cleaning house at a certain point in that movie. I know it was a little bit different than the original plan, but he did have to factor in that human element. So he makes that adjustment. He gets some of these people out of there that needed it for the culture. And then the other thing I liked about what he did was that he also did that kind of that one-on-one with all these different players throughout this thing to get them to buy in. He realized he had to get buy-in and you had to get the whole organization pulling in the same direction. So he's going around to each of these guys. He's explaining to them their individual fit to this whole thing and how they can make this work. And I thought that was pretty underrated, because you can have all these number crunchers and bean counters, but if you don't have a guy who can sell it to these guys and get everybody on the same page, it ain't going to go anywhere. And that way he has of mixing with all these guys, that's just thought was just really valuable, really. He takes over basically the manager role.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and Colin Cowherd says there's analytics and there's manalytics. And Billy Bean was like, was Dan was just describing, like the manalytics part is what tied it together. him getting the buy-in from all the other players, especially on something that was brand new. If I had to say favorite characters, I thought Brad Pitt was excellent in this. He made that character really pretty likable. And I also liked, who was the guy that played, I think it was Scott Hattiesburg. It's been a few years since I've seen this, but that I really liked his character too. I thought he was a good addition to the movie.
Yeah, Chris Pratt, actually, he wanted to be that role. And that was when he was in the middle of Parks and Recreation. And he wanted that role. And they told him he was too fat. So that's why he started to lose weight for that role. Because they were like, no, you're too fat. You're not going to get this role. So that was what started him losing all that weight. Because in Parks and Rec, especially at the beginning, he's a bigger guy. And then that kind of fed into his Jurassic Park movies and all that. So,
well, not to mention Guardians.
Oh, yeah, and Guardians.
Arguably one of his biggest roles in Guardians of the Galaxy. So it was kind of cool to see him in there.
Yeah, one of my favorite performances was Philip Seymour Hoffman as
Arnold. I was going to say
so
that.
Funny. So funny.
He's one of those actors that I get excited when I see him in a movie and then get really sad because I remember that he passed. So it's like him and Robin Williams and a couple of others that just have that impact on me. But I thought his performance was great.
What about Ernest from Ernest Goes to School?
Yeah, I've never seen
Ernest
movie, so he doesn't.
Bud's favorite dead actor.
You're missing out.
But Philip Seymour Hoffman as Art Howe, I thought was wonderful too.
Yeah,
I thought you really needed that force for Billy to kind of butt heads.
Yeah, and, which is funny because that's one.
And they butted heads over and over again, but it was needed.
And that's one of the parts that they actually Hollywoodized, because actually Art Howe was supportive of it.
On board.
Right.
Yeah.
He was all on board.
It created kind of that conflict for the movie. Right?
I like the conflict in Rudy, how they just put that in with the coach.
Isn't it amazing, Phil, just mentioning Philip Seymour Hoffman as an actor, the different types of roles that he played? You have a lot of actors that play very similar type of roles throughout their movies, but he was very versatile.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And especially in The Big Lebowski.
I feel like some of these casting what-ifs, there are quite a few sports movie characters that Philip Seymour Hoffman could have played. And we really haven't reached out with him.
Talking about casting on this movie, an interesting thing that I've learned about this film is that all the agents, they're sitting there, the scouts in the room, where Billy Bean's bringing in Peter Brant, and they're sitting there, and all the old scouts are all talking around table.
Right.
Those are actually baseball scouts.
Mm-hmm. Really? Except for like two. I think there are a couple that aren't.
Yeah, there's a couple. Yeah, there's a couple actors in there, but the vast majority of them are baseball scouts, and they were just told, just talk, as you're going. So, he's got an ugly girlfriend. So that's a lot.
That was so funny.
Oh, my goodness.
That's not in the script. That's just straight up.
Six tops.
Well, and actually, that's a story that is partially true that was said at one time, because the scout at one point didn't want a player because he didn't have an attractive girlfriend. And in real life, he cited this rather than he has no confidence, which is what they did in the movie. He cited it as he has bad eyesight. So that is actually kind of part of a story.
That's funny.
But in real life, it was he doesn't have an attractive girlfriend, so he must have bad eyesight.
It cracked me up because of how they used to evaluate. So, the ball explodes off the bat, or he's got a good face, and stuff. It's just, it cracked me up. I liked it.
It's not like he really had to do a ton of acting in it, but I thought having David Justice in this was just cool as hell.
Yeah.
And it's actually David Justice.
Wow, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, the original idea of casting this movie was that they were all going to be actual baseball players. They weren't going to have any actors.
That's pretty funny.
Roles. Yeah.
Was it actually David Justice?
Yes.
At first, I looked it up.
I didn't realize.
I don't think it was.
I don't know.
Hatterberg was Chris Pratt, obviously.
David Justice, right there. Boy.
I know it says that, but if you go on the IMDb page, it's somebody else.
It's Stephen Bishop who is the actor.
Yeah, Stephen Bishop.
Is it really?
He just looks a lot like him.
Yeah, he just looks like him.
No, because when I first looked up the movie, I was about to text you guys about David Justice being in the movie because his picture and name popped up. And I was like, that's strange. So I looked into it and it was someone else. But at first glance, it looks like it was David Justice.
Strike that from the record.
Yeah, Stephen. Half the sources have it as actually him.
Yeah.
I heard Stephen Bishop was quite the ball player, though.
Curveball pie, you, Brad.
Apparently, that was the slider. I just didn't see it coming.
Yes, Stephen Bishop was a ball player.
But regardless, I thought the character was funny, like bringing in the tiny little things, like bringing in, which came back around, the dollar drinks or whatever. Yeah. And the fact that when Billy was on the phone working that into one of the deals, like, oh no, you're paying for my drinks for 2 years or however long.
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
It was, and it's, and the person on the other end of the phone probably thinks, what the hell is this guy talking about? But the fact that he noticed these little things, and that I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, him relating to the players. He was trying to show he listened and he cared about these guys. And that was such a little thing monetarily that he could work into a deal, but would make his guys happy. I just thought that was cool.
I mean, yeah. Billy likes to keep his money on the field. He's like, well, how do I see that dollar on the field?
You have to look for it.
What's that dollar soda buying?
And ironically, you get one of those bottles of soda now in a machine. They're every bit of a dollar anywhere you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More like three. Know,
I agree with you on the whole Billy Bean heart thing. I think that the characterization in the movie for him was really good, because there's always this kind of undercurrent of some heart and some actual caring, not calculated, cold individual.
Yeah.
I think that the daughter story actually worked in pretty decent. It is a bit shoehorned, but all in all, I actually enjoyed those scenes.
Yeah. What do you think of the daughter as a child actor?
Could be worse.
Could be worse.
Could be worse.
Fun fact, that girl.
Hey, that's pretty good for Rob.
She's also in Diary of a Wimpy Kid, a couple of those.
Yeah, I've seen
it. To watch those.
Was she up to JP level?
No. God, no. Come on.
Sacrilege.
Delete that. Delete that question. You just look stupid.
So, guys, I came up with a different than normal question. Because this movie was, what, about 2 hours and 15 minutes long? Pretty, yeah. P.S., we keep picking long movies.
Pretty lengthy.
For some reason. But the movie being that long, what are your guys' opinions? Did it need to be that long, or no. Are there scenes that you think could have been cut? And if so, what scene or scenes do you think could have been done away with?
Red Sox scene, definitely the end of the movie. How I would maybe say is, even at the end of the streak, then you could almost go into just credits at that point of just saying what happened after the fact. Because really,
didn't add anything.
The movie kind of felt like
100% disagree with that.
Oh, we're going to have Phil and Rob.
I put that as my motivational scene.
What, the Red Sox scene?
Phil, my question is where are you going to plug in the money down?
I think that scene was needed.
All right, so let's do this. Let's each one of you make your case. Individually, not a back and forth, just Rob say your piece, Phil say your piece. I'm interested.
I don't know if I can defend it, but I like,
of course.
No, I just want to hear your
piece
your,
it your, together.
I just want to hear your opinion, Phil. This is cool. Let's let this ride.
I'm already said my piece, so go.
All right,
Ben. I thought it was needed to show how much he was respected, and to show them offering him the money and him turning it down. The fact that he was offered that much money, which you could do that, I guess, in after the fact this was happened. But I thought him turning that down to stay with the A's when they had all this money to give him, I thought of that as the motivational scene of the movie for me, which was weird because it was at the end. But I thought that scene, they needed that scene to tie it all up at the end, was my thought process.
But what's interesting about that scene too is you think about it, it's exactly relatable back to the theme of the movie, because everybody's talking about big money players and would it have been hypocritical for him to take a huge money contract after he just broke the system of big money players?
Would it be very apropos considering that the name of the movie is Moneyball? So
that's a good point. But really, sure. This was another one of those movies that I didn't feel like it was over 2 hours. I love the aspect of watching someone build a team. That is interesting to me. Yeah. And yeah. I was enthralled the whole movie because it was just watching Peter Brand and Billy Bean work on building this team. And I enjoyed the baseball scenes, and I couldn't tell it was 2 hours and 15 minutes.
You know, for an actual sports movie, the baseball scenes are actually fairly, there's not very many.
That's what I was going to say. There's like the one on the comeback so they can get to the 20 win streak. And that was it.
Right.
We almost watch more baseball on the scouting tapes and such like that than we do in actual.
I love the way they used real life footage mixed in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
So what other scenes do you think we could have kicked, Cass, if any?
I think you could probably take out a few of the scenes where you've got like the head scout is all mad and pissed off. I think you could probably cut him down a bit.
Yeah.
I think that you could probably cut out that scene where he goes to his ex-wife's house.
Cell phone scene. Who cares?
Honestly, that's right.
And the mixtape where he listens to the same song over with his daughter or whatever.
Yeah, I don't really know how to work on all that.
Cut it.
But you need the ex-wife. You need the ex-wife.
Phil's gonna get real familiar with that soon.
You need the ex-wife in there because that was Robin Wright, and you needed Princess Buttercup in the movie.
Okay, anybody?
Check. Great. She gets paid even if her scenes get cut.
Did anybody else just think that
win-win?
Her new husband just needed to be punched right in the face. That dude, oh my God. That dude, I was like, he just needs to stop. Just stop talking.
He's like, too bad we lost Jayam. Bye.
We can all talk about the cell phone. Her mother and I all talk about it. Okay.
Yeah.
The guy left his spine about two blocks down the road. But no, I agree with Phil. It did have a pretty good flow to it, so it didn't feel crazy long. But it was a pretty long, especially by today's standards. It was a pretty long movie. So I think we touched on this or hinted in this a little bit, guys. But I'm going to leave it open on character-wise. But unless Phil already found some, what do you think about some casting what ifs?
Excellent. I have one.
He's got one.
I have a list from Bleacher Report that says 8 actors who should have played Billy Bean. And I'm going to do those after you guys kick around a few. But Peter Brand, Dimitri Martin was originally asked to play Peter Brand. And he's a comedian for those he's on.
Okay, I've got
See the guy that draws the pictures? And
He was on The Daily Show for a while.
Yeah. I've got one for Peter Brand.
So Danny DeVito.
Not really, but I just have a few Josh, you know.
I would love to see Danny DeVito deliver the line, "This is my first job ever."
Actually, you know what? I could see either Tom Cruise or Matt Damon playing Billy Bean, though, honestly.
How about Colin Farrell? That was one that I thought of.
Honestly,
I don't like Colin Farrell that much.
What'd you say, Rob?
That doesn't do much for me.
I could see Matt Damon or Tom Cruise doing it, though.
I could see Jake Gyllenhaal doing Pete.
Oh,
you could nerd him up a little bit.
You never know.
He's also on Broadway.
That weird, nerdy, cerebral guy.
I could see John C. Reilly. John C. Reilly playing Pete.
Jake Gyllenhaal is also on Broadway in Little Shop of Horrors, and his character in Little Shop of Horrors is an extreme nerd. So he can nerd it up a little. Yeah. Would you like to hear what Bleacher Report said?
That sounds awesome, Phil.
Sure.
Okay. Yay or nay? Let me know. Billy Bob Thornton.
No.
He'd be better as like a manager, like a crusty old.
He could have done the Art Howe role.
He doesn't have the nuance. Okay.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
I could see it.
And I think he would rock.
He would rock the role, but I think
it's like the Wolf of Wall. It's kind of like the Wolf of Wall Street role,
which was Jonah Hill. I was in that also. So
no, he wasn't that. That was great. Okay.
Right, this is
so there's some chemistry.
This next one apparently is kind of a joke, but because they said just kidding. But Kevin Costner.
What are we gonna call it? Field of Balls.
Justin Timberlake.
Timberlake could have nerded up and played the Peter Brant role.
Could have. John Cusack.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could have been a good one. Yes.
Matt Damon is number two on the list. I believe Bud said
there
Matt
you Damon. Go. Yeah, Bud said
that. I think he can do it, yeah.
Rob Lowe.
Yeah.
I can see
Rob. Yeah, because he, yeah, he would have the right attitude.
He's not as good of an actor, I don't think, but.
No, but he would be able to do this role, I think. And the reason why I don't like DiCaprio in this is because I think DiCaprio would actually go above this, what's required for this role.
Okay.
Gotcha. That's a good point.
And anybody in this, you also have to be able to believe that they were a huge baseball prospect at some point, too.
Hey, DiCaprio.
I mean, not that Danny DeVito couldn't have been a baseball player. But I mean,
hey, have you ever seen Tim Lincecum? Okay, it's not like he's just. Like,
he's short. Oh, he's short. God. He's close to the ground. Can catch the grounders. And
his strike zone is really tight.
Yeah, the strike zone, man.
He's a super tiny strike zone.
Yeah. So, on base percentage is incredible.
He gets hit the ball a lot. If anything, I would think they are half a roll. If anything.
Yeah,
I could see him going off on the field.
I think you got to put him in there as the crotchety scout who doesn't want to change. And this is all
I could see that.
Time.
I could see
I'm not going to fire F you, Billy guy. Yeah, that's definitely.
That was awesome.
I thought we were going to put him in as Chris Pratt's role and have him play in first base.
There you go. Talk about a small strike zone.
Of extension on first base.
I want Danny DeVito to play the ex-wife's new husband.
Yes.
Yes.
Or
she went from Brad Pitt to Danny DeVito. Good job.
Or Danny DeVito.
And he's playing himself.
Hey. The guy who played the young Billy Bean. As he was playing the young Billy Bean, I kept thinking, poor guy, you look nothing like a young Brad Pitt.
No.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry about that.
Oh, man.
If they would have made that movie today, they could have just did one of those deep fakes of like Legends of the
Fall. Yeah, I know, right?
Or just put it on his
AI.
One thing about the movie that I found interesting is they talked about the analytics and not necessarily reaching for the huge names, the big money guys. But it didn't mention that during that time, they had three pitchers who had 15 plus wins because Mark Mulder was on the A's, Tim Hudson and Barry Zito.
Yeah. Who's the second?
All big time pitchers.
Yeah, yeah, Mulder, Hudson, and Barry Zito.
Hudson, yeah, that's right.
And who all disappeared completely after they left the
A's. And all much bigger deals than Jason Isringhausen, by the way.
And they had two hitters with over 30 home runs and 100 runs batted in, Eric Chavez and Miguel Tejada, won the AL MVP in 2002. So it's not like they were a bunch of stiffs just trying.
It wasn't like cupboard was totally bare as it's made out to be.
Well, that's kind of thing that cracked me up about this movie because they wanted to talk about Johnny Damon like he's some kind of homegrown player. Johnny Damon was traded to Oakland from Kansas City.
From the Royals, exactly. Nobody ever remembers that.
One stinking season in Oakland before he passed a buck and got
I forgot he played for the A's. I only thought of him as a Royal and as a Red Sox.
Bitter Royal fans here, listeners. Just letting you know.
Yes, exactly. But Giambi, I always thought of Giambi as Nay, but I'm surprised they didn't bring up Mark McGwire while they were at it. But
hey, did Giambi get nailed for steroids, right? Or did Jason? Yeah, didn't
Giambi?
He?
Yeah, he was part of it. He was part of it.
We're getting nailed. Sorry. Just
fun fact about the A's, man. It's
If we're thinking A's and steroids, we can't go through that without bringing up Jose Canseco.
I was going to say, when in doubt, just guess at anybody from the mid-90s to
whip it out. Is
probably on roids. If they're hitting a lot of home.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was right in the heart of the steroid era. So if they would have introduced that a little bit. Hey, take one for the team. Take this needle for the team there, Isringhausen.
Scott Hattieburg, you have no feeling in your arm? Yeah, well, put it right here. You won't feel a thing.
What's that called? What's that called, Mr. Rob? That's HGH. That's good.
It's good for you. It's good.
Interesting.
For you.
It's just
so now we know what rubbing it around can make, which is called juicers or something. Just go over all the steroid guys in the era.
What was Barry Bonds using the bomb? The
horse steroids.
He's just like sitting there rubbing it on.
Ivermectin.
Like, dude, I'm going to made him like lose his hair and then grow like three hat sizes.
You guys,
that was nuts.
Y'all make fun
the
of
cream in the clear. We'll
never make it to Joe Rogan.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Hey, Phil, we've had some good discussion here. What do you say we kick it over and see what the wives think about this awesome movie?
And we're back with the wives segment of our Moneyball podcast. I am here with Michelle Hyder, Erica Still, and Jessica Walfall. How are y'all doing today?
Good.
Good.
I want to start off with, what is your background with this movie? Have you seen it before? Was this your first time? So what's your history with Moneyball?
I had seen it before. Brad and I had watched it, I think maybe more than once.
Yeah, we actually went to see it in the movie theater back before we had kids. We used to go to the movies a lot. So 2011 was when it came out. So yeah, that was the year before we had Mason. So we saw a lot of movies.
I, of course, have not seen it. Surprise, surprise. But no surprise. I actually had heard of this one. So that's a plus.
Progress.
Michelle, we're going to find a movie you've seen. We're going to at some point. There has to be one.
I forgot. Rob mentioned a movie the other day and I was like, oh my God, I've actually seen that one, but I can't remember what movie it was now.
and you're going to swear Rob to secrecy. So we don't know.
I can't remember what it was.
What other actor do you think could have done a good job playing the part of Billy Bean, which in the movie was played by Brad Pitt? Is there an actor you think could have done that job?
I thought maybe Ben Affleck.
I thought Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Matt Damon. That was my second.
I had Matt Damon too.
Matt Damon would be my first.
Yeah.
I had Matt Damon as my first. I had actually Leonardo DiCaprio as a second for me.
That's a good one.
Oh, that's interesting. That could work.
So think about an actor that would have been funny to see them play the part of Billy Bean.
Danny DeVito or something.
Danny DeVito. Josh is going to be happy you picked Danny DeVito.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know. That's a hard one.
That is a hard one. I just want to say Will Smith because he's so funny.
Okay.
And it's such a serious-ish role. I don't know. I was thinking comedians.
With this movie, Moneyball, I want you to rank it with either... It's basically 1 through 5. A strikeout is a 1. A single is a 2. Double is a 3. Triple is a 4. And home run is a 5. So what would it be? A strikeout, a single, a double, a triple, or a home run?
I'd say a home run.
A triple.
I'd say triple.
I'd say a home run. I thought it was really entertaining. And it went by super fast. Like, I didn't feel like it was 2 hours.
I agree. It did go really fast.
I have learned that that's kind of how I decide what is a good movie is me if too. It's a long runtime, but it doesn't seem like it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a lot of times I don't like watching movies because I feel like they're long and drawn out and it just moves slow, especially like this one I felt like you got into right away too. Some movies can have a slow start where it kind of takes you a while to get into them, but I feel like I can get into this one right away.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we will catch you next time for our next full movie podcast. Thank you.
All right, and we're back after getting some different viewpoints from our better halves. Guys, after going through all that, what do you say we get some opinions from the critics on this, if Phil has any reviews?
On Rotten Tomato, the audience gives it 86% favorable. The critics give it 94% favorable.
Wow.
And a couple
critics higher than the audience. Wow. Yes. That's doesn't happen.
I like to get one positive and one negative, just a little bit from each of them. And Ollie Richards from Empire Magazine said, "You don't need to understand anything of baseball to get behind this. A chest swelling story about second chances and flipping a finger up to the man." So that's a positive one. The more negative one is Luke Thompson from E! Online said, "The entertaining banter between Pitt and Jonah Hill isn't quite enough to make such an insular world compelling." So he was not compelled when I thought it was very compelling.
He's probably got an ugly girlfriend too.
Yeah. That's what he was upset about.
No kidding.
That is a good point about the insular world, though, because it's other than you have a little piece with the Indians of the game with the Royals, it's basically like you're on an island in the whole movie. It's like the rest of baseball is kind of just an afterthought. That is interesting that he said that, even if I disagree.
So I guess now that we've heard those, how about we go around and give your rankings, guys. Let's do it. 1 through 10 balls. Let's rank it. How many balls do you think this movie deserves?
I'd give it 6.9 balls.
One got cut a little.
Who's shaving that tenth off a ball there?
Oh God. Phil's doctor.
Watch out, Phil.
for this ranking one, you guys just want to go. I guess I'll start with Josh. What do you got on ranking on this movie?
I'll give it an 8. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I would go all the way to 10 because it's a movie. I probably haven't watched it since I watched it in the theater. And then I watched it again. It's good. Like I like the story, and I think like the dialogue, like Rob said, is really good. But you know, it's a movie that once you know the story and you know what's going on, it's not like it's something that's super inspirational in the sense that you're going to want to watch it again and get yourself pumped up or whatever. Yeah. So that's what I would say. Really good movie. Not a ton of replay value. I'll say that.
It's missing that JP crucial element.
It doesn't have the JP that gets me coming back or Danny. JP,
the actor who played JP, if you are listening, we would love to have you on the podcast.
Yes. We will review Angels in the Outfield when you come on.
So we got 8 from Josh. Bud, how many balls you got?
I already said 6.9. No, I'm kidding. I'm actually with Josh. I'd give it an 8. I really liked it. But it's not the kind of movie you watch over and over. Once you've seen it, though, it's good. Maybe if you catch it randomly on TV, you'll watch it again. But it's not like something you would maybe watch every single year, necessarily. Good, but I'd give it an 8 as well.
Mr. Dan?
I'm kind of like that. I like the movie. I learned a lot, actually, watching the movie. I think it's pretty interesting how it has worked its way into all these other sports, and we're seeing it like all the time. So I guess that's the thing. In a way, it's if you just halfway keep up with any sport, you're immersed in that world. So it's a little repetitive, I guess you could say. So I'd probably give it like probably a 7. I mean, it's no Rudy.
Redundant.
Yeah.
It's tough to follow Rudy though, let's be honest. But
yeah. But I mean, it's good. But yeah, I'd probably give it a 7 and catch it in a few years or something. Yeah.
Move on to the very in-depth thoughts of Robert Hyder.
Give me another 9. This is a movie I've watched several times, so it was very rewatchable for me. I would actually even rank this probably in my top 5 favorite sports movies, honestly.
Wow.
Oh, right. Baseball guy.
Even though it's about one of your bitter rivals.
Well, I mean, here's the thing: the Astros got moved to the AL West.
They were an AL West back then.
That's true. We were an NL team at the time of all this.
The National League Central back in those days.
Yeah, 16 NL Central too, because C League just happened to force the Brewers on over. Long story there, but yeah, 9 out of 10 feels good for me.
Very good. And Mr. Philip, how many balls are you going to give it this movie?
I'm going back and forth between 7 and 8. So I am going to give it a 7.5.
You're going to cut your own ball.
7.5.
He's going to ride the fence.
I just keep going back and forth between 7 and 8. I can't decide what I want. I agree that I don't feel like it's going to have a bunch of replay value for me per se. It's hard because I have only watched it once, so I haven't watched it numerous times where I can say for sure, but it's not going to be a movie that I want to watch every year or even every couple of years. But I really enjoyed it. But yeah, I'd probably go with a 7.5.
I think I'm gonna go with Josh and Bud and give this thing an 8. I thought it's a great movie, put together, casted, great storyline. But like you said, if it's on TV, sure, I'll watch it and all that, but I'm not going to seek it out and be like, man, I really want to watch Moneyball again, or just randomly like that. But it was a solidly made film. I'm pretty comfortable with an 8. One more little bit of info for our loyal listeners. You guys are in for a treat, because next we're going to hear from the illustrious Rob Hyder on what direction we're taking our movie reviews next month. Rob, what you got?
Yeah, so I'm thinking that we have done so many comedies here lately, very laugh fests such as Cinderella Man and Rudy, Moneyball. I think that we need to serious this up a little bit. So we're going to go with a very much a tearjerker film starring a Will Ferrell, and as they try to uplift some youngins out there, play some soccer and kicking and screaming next month.
Yeah, great kicking movie, by the screaming. Way.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Yep, so get your popcorn and your juice box. We'll see what this all brings to Sportsflix.
And lay off that corduroy jacket you're wearing.
Awesome. Cool, well guys.
Corduroy jacket.
He's like, you lay off. He's like, why don't you lay off that corduroy jacket you're wearing? Now take a lap. He makes the parents take laps. I love that movie.
I know you do, man. So
I wish I had that kind of clout whenever I was coaching soccer.
I feel like we had some good discussion. And to all of our listeners out there, be sure to keep watch because we're going to have a couple mini episodes coming out between now and Mr. Rob Hyder's movie. So keep a lookout for that. And we'll catch you next time.